Well, good afternoon. Welcome to our December panel of the Court of Appeals. Obviously, we're not able to be together in person, so we appreciate you joining us on WebEx today. As indicated during the sound check, I am pleased to be joined with Judge Frankie Moore from North Platte and our Chief Judge Mike Pirtle from Omaha, and I'm Francie Reedman. Despite the unusual circumstances, we're still live streaming these, and they are also recorded for archiving. So to the extent there's any sensitive information that you don't want broadcast, just keep that in mind. With that, we will start. Our first case of the day is Buns versus AC Lighting Protection Company. Buns versus AC Lighting Protection Company, Inc. Appellant, if you're ready to begin, you may start.
May it please the court, my name is Kelsey Palmer and I represent AC Lighting and Protection Company. I want to provide you with a brief summary of facts of this case. Plaintiff was injured in the course and scope of his employment with my client on October 12, 2017. He suffered a compensable low back injury for which defendants accepted responsibility. Plaintiff then treated conservatively from October 12, 2017 to December 4, 2017. In fact, he only received medication in response to his low back injury during that time. In December 2017, Dr. McClellan, his treating specialist, recommended plaintiff participate in physical therapy, and he released him to return to work. Plaintiff did not participate in physical therapy and returned to work full-time for defendant on a light-duty basis. In February 2018, plaintiff voluntarily left his employment with defendant and began working for 1-800-GOT-JUNK as a driver. Plaintiff worked 40 to 60 hours a week, and when he experienced a significant low back injury on May 26, 2018, after moving a 100-pound wooden desk in his basement, he did not return to his job at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Plaintiff then returned to Dr. McClellan, and further treatment was indicated. Defendant denied treatment. We alleged a subsequent intervening cause. Judge Fitzgerald of the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court found plaintiff proved he suffered a recurrence of the October 12, 2017 work injury rather than an independent intervening cause.
Ms. Palmer, if I could ask from the get-go then, that determination by the trial court judge is reviewed how by us on appeal?
So on appeal, it depends on what arguments we're making. So whether this is a factual argument or a legal argument. I am arguing that Judge Fitzgerald misapplied the correct legal standard in determining whether the accident was a recurrence or an independent intervening cause. So given that this is a question of law, this court is obligated to make its own determinations. In the alternative, however, if this court finds that Judge Fitzgerald did apply the appropriate standard, we are arguing that the record is not supported by competent evidence. You do have to defer to the judge's decision in that instance, for example.
So, Ms. Palmer, let's say I throw in with you that Dr. McClellan made lots of varying statements in his report and deposition that frankly go both directions, if you will. So if it's a factual question, isn't the trial court allowed to accept some portion of an expert's testimony or opinion and reject other portions of it?
I would agree that a judge is able to make a factual determination on expert testimony. However, when you look at Dr. McClellan's opinion, I don't think it's appropriate when you're looking at it as a whole. They are making direct contradictions to each other throughout the whole deposition testimony. At one point, he says that moving the desk caused an aggravation of the previous aggravation. At another point, he says moving the desk caused the larger herniation. At one point, he says more likely than not, the need for current treatment is related to the desk incident rather than the work-related incident. And then he turns around and says, well, the desk incident was a contributing cause, not a major factor. The desk incident was a combination of, the need for medical treatment was a combination of events. So I don't think it's appropriate to just take one part of an expert testimony when it's completely contradicted. There have been instances where a court has taken perhaps a permanent impairment rating and accepted restrictions, but denied the date of maximum medical improvement. Those aren't directly contradicted. Here we're talking about direct contradictions within the deposition testimony. And that's why I don't think it's appropriate for Judge Fitzgerald to have cherry-picked the arguments that support plaintiffs, but completely disregard the arguments that are in response in support of a defendant's position.
Is that an issue of credibility of the witness?
I think it's an issue of credibility, I don't think it's an issue of credibility of the witness. When Judge Fitzgerald was analyzing McClellan's deposition, he was not speaking in response to any of plaintiff's testimony. He was simply citing the deposition testimony of Dr. McClellan. And so for that reason, I don't think it's an issue of credibility of the plaintiff.
But couldn't the trial court have taken into consideration the additional evidence from Mr. Buns that he continued to have pain in that same area throughout between October of 17 and May of 18?
He could have taken that into consideration, but again, with the deposition testimony, and plaintiff must present a medical expert testimony in order to prove his compensable claim. He has to still find support within a medical expert testimony. And it's just not supported because it's completely contradictory all over the map. And again, if both defendants and plaintiffs are able to use the opinion when their arguments are completely in opposite of each other, it goes to show that the whole opinion should be disregarded. I do want to mention just a bit about Judge Fitzgerald's application of the incorrect legal standard. In this case, I am arguing that he applied the incorrect legal standard. And again, because this is a question of law, this court has the ability to make its own determinations. If you refer to the trial transcript of this case on pages 16 to 17, Judge Fitzgerald was talking with the parties prior to the testimony beginning and argued that in order for defendants to deny benefits of future medical, they would have to demonstrate that the second accident was the sole proximate cause of the need for future treatment and cause of disability. This is actually not the correct standard. Doty and Mendoza are both Supreme Court cases, and both which discuss the recurrence versus independent intervening causes. And they both cite to Larson's workers' compensation law. That discussion holds that a second injury will be considered a recurrence of the first if the triggering activity is not itself rash, intentional, or unreasonable in light of plaintiff's knowledge of his condition, or the second incident does not contribute even slightly to the causation of the disabling condition. The opposite would also be true. So if the activity is rash, intentional, or unreasonable, if it contributes even slightly to the causation, that would be considered an independent intervening cause. By misapplying that legal standard, Judge Fitzgerald lessened plaintiff's burden. Plaintiff only had to prove that the second injury was not the sole cause, instead of arguing it didn't contribute even slightly. If he had applied the correct standard, plaintiff's request for medical treatment would be denied. He was acting irrationally and intentionally. He moved a 100-pound solid wood desk after being assigned a 15-pound lifting restriction from his physician. Both Doty and Mendoza, which Judge Fitzgerald uses to support his argument, provide examples of what's considered reasonable and not rash. They talk about bending over to kiss your daughter. They talk about sneezing. They talk about raising a window. They talk about hanging up a suit. Plaintiff was moving a 100-pound desk on carpet in his basement by himself after being assigned a 15-pound work restriction. This is not at all comparable to the example cited in Doty and Mendoza.
That was a lifting restriction, right?
It was a lifting restriction, that's correct.
Was he lifting the desk or didn't he testify he was trying to push it?
He testified he was shuffling the desk back and forth, although in his statement to the emergency room the next day, he stated that he was lifting the desk. Whether you're shuffling a 100-pound desk on carpet or lifting a desk, I would argue that both require force that he should not have been using, knowing that he had a 15-pound lifting restriction and knowing full well that he had a back injury dating back to October 2017.
I go back to the court's finding. It made a factual finding that it was not a rash activity given his size and strength. So don't we defer to that factual decision here?
Not in this case, because I'm arguing that he misapplied the legal standard. So by misapplying the legal standard, the court now has the opportunity here today to apply its own analysis to the rule discussed in Doty and Mendoza, which says that an accident will be a recurrence only if the triggering activity is not rash, not intentional, not unreasonable, or if the second injury does not contribute even slightly to the causation of the disabling condition. So you're able to substitute your own analysis in this case because I'm arguing he misapplied the legal standard.
Well, following up on Judge Moore's question, isn't the issue of whether his actions were rash or not a factual determination?
Can I answer your question?
Sure.
I ran out of time here.
Yes, please.
I would argue you can substitute your own analysis in this case because I am making an argument that Judge Fitzgerald applied the wrong legal conclusion, which is a question of law, and you're able to substitute your own analysis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Levin?
Thank you. May it please the court, Danny Levin on behalf of the appellee Nathaniel Bunce. I would like to make two points. The first is with respect to the discussion that's already been had about whether there was a recurrence or a subsequent intervening cause. And the second point would be in reference to the temporary total disability benefits that were awarded Mr. Bunce. With respect to the first, I would call the court's attention to the Fees versus Rivet case, which was cited in our brief, that generally causation is a factual question. And here, the issue of causation is in dispute, and the trial court was deciding how to resolve that dispute, whether the second incident in May 2018 was caused by the original work incident in October 2017. For that reason, he was making a credibility decision with respect to Dr. McClellan's testimony. He was making
Mr. Levin, what does the law tell us when there's a conflict within the one expert's opinion?
Well, I think that relies back to what Chief Judge Pirtle was discussing, whether it's a credibility issue, and that's a determination for the compensation court to make, and allows that compensation court to make that determination. I think that's further supported by the Supreme Court's decision just last Friday in Park versus Hy-Vee, where the compensation court, it reiterated, took into consideration the expert's testimony, the plaintiff's testimony, and weighed that in its determination, and was completely authorized to make that decision about the expert's opinions. I think what's important to note here is that there is an abundance of information and evidence by Dr. McClellan that this injury was a recurrence as opposed to a subsequent intervening cause, principally that Mr. Bunce's injury on May 27th, 2018 was suffered in the same location as the original injury. And it was the same kind of injury as the original injury at L3-4 and L4-5. This is not the type of situation as the Griffin case that we cite in our brief, where a medication was taken and a stroke suffered, and it was alleged that that stroke was attributable to the work injury. The court's analysis in that case focused on things like the degree and the extent of the usage of the medication, the passage of time. I think that this case fits much more in the framework of Doty and Mendoza, where the court was looking to make a factual determination about the plaintiff's rational determination to push the desk, not lift it, but push the desk, given his size of, you know, 300 plus pounds, former football player, and ability to bench press and squat a lot of weight. He's taking all that into consideration, and therefore we think that it fits more in the context of the Doty and Mendoza analysis.
Well, can you respond to the argument that the language about the second incident not contributing even slightly to the causation of the disabling condition is the appropriate standard, and the trial court didn't apply that?
Yes, Judge Moore, I think the rationale of the Mendoza case, I assume you're referring to the Mendoza case, and in that case, when the court was making the determination of whether the event was a recurrence or a subsequent intervening event, it took into consideration the time, which was far more than our case here. It was a time frame of 2 years between the original work incident and the event when the employee was putting the carcass on the conveyor belt that required the subsequent medical care. And Dr. Bowman in that case relied on the disc pathology, the original CT, to make a determination about whether the second event was caused by the original event. And so when we're discussing the slight language, it has to be taken into consideration when the court was relying on the doctor's testimony. When I say the court, I'm referring to Mendoza. When the Mendoza court was relying on Dr. Bowman's testimony, that it wasn't a possibility, it wasn't speculative. He's not reaching here. He's simply making a medical determination that the original injury is the cause of the second injury. And I think that fits squarely with our case here. When Dr. McClellan offered opinions, on pages 26 through 31, more or less, of the Bill of Exceptions, he's saying, look, this is an injury in the same location. It was the same type of injury, and the injury got larger. That was his testimony. And so I think that fits squarely in the context of that. And then as to the second point with respect to the temporary total disability benefits, as Exhibit 15 clearly states, temporary total disability benefits were paid from October, the date of injury, to December 2017. And so the only issue is with respect to those benefits ordered by the court from May 2018 to the date of trial in February 2020. And in that context, I think that it follows that because the court found that the original work injury caused and contributed to the second work injury, that those disability benefits should also be paid. And again, I would refer to the court to the Parks versus Hy-Vee case just last Friday in its discussion of Section 48-180 of the Workers' Compensation Statutes, and that statute does not distinguish between the Workers' Compensation Court making a modification and a party making a motion for a modification. And so if the court, assuming the compensation court did not award temporary total disability benefits from May 2018 to the date of trial, plaintiff's counsel would simply file a motion to modify. The evidence is clearly supporting that those benefits should be paid to Mr. Bunce, and that award would be modified accordingly.
Was there a stipulation of some kind entered into about that issue?
Chief Judge, I would say no, that a stipulation constitutes some sort of agreement or meeting of the minds. And trial counsel admittedly misapprehended the fact that temporary total disability benefits had been paid to date, when in fact they had only been paid from the date of injury to December 2017. But there was no agreement to that that would constitute a stipulation. So for those reasons, I would ask the court to uphold the compensation court's award of February 2020. And I thank the court for its time.
Thank you. And I believe the appellant was out of time. So the case is submitted and the parties are free to go. Thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.